practicing two games a week, you know, perhaps three games a week, learning how to rotate your squad effectively. And I know Pochettino, you know, I know Pochettino's not won anything yet, nor really is Eddie Howe, and he's not learned, in my opinion, how to balance your squad in managing your team through a league season, through a domestic cup season as well, because they've gone out of the FA Cup early recently over the last few years.
When John Terry was going to step up to take the penalty in the 2008 European Cup final in Moscow, and to me, we lost, and that's the closest I've come to almost crying.
Right, in 3-0 up against Manchester United, lose 5-3, and he was, I think he was in the squad that day.
He was
3-0 up against a 10-man Manchester City, lose 4-3. 4-2 up against 10-man Leicester, draw 4-4. Under Tim Sherwood, getting battered 4-0 by Liverpool and Chelsea, and then being well beaten somewhere on the line by Arsenal in the FA Cup as well.
Hello and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast with myself, Jordan Jarrett Bryan, your host on the pod this week. I'm joined by Spurs fan David. What are you saying, David?
I'm good. Jordan, how are you?
Very, very well, thank you. Very well. Your mob, what was the result for your lot on the weekends? 3-2.
3-2 win over Wolves, yeah.
Almost blew it.
I was thinking 5 days after Gary Neville makes a comment of Spurs were spineless, toothless, gutless once upon a time.
You should
I
have
think
a bit of fire.
That's what he's referring to.
We might get to that as well, actually, later on the show, actually. Get your opinion on that. And I'm also joined by United fan Akin. Akin, what are you saying? Did your mob win? Yeah, you, as well. Just about at Bournemouth.
United won. Jordan, why did you say your whole name when you introduced yourself? Do you think that you're somebody now?
Well,
Jordan won an award over the weekend.
I was going to get to that.
Congratulations,
Jordan.
Now he's giving us the whole double barrel. No one cares that much. Yeah,
I was going to mention the award.
The award can't be worth that much if you won.
I was going to mention the award, not because I'm egotistical or I'm vain, but only so much as a part of why I won the award was because of the work that is done on this show. And I did.
You're welcome.
I did mention to many people on the night. We have some fantastic fans and guests on the show, so I would like to thank the two of you and all of our regulars.
Well done, though.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I do want to name check a few of the regulars that have been making the pod what it has been over the last 3 years. So the likes of the regulars: G, Josh, Marv, Tasha, Stephen, Simeon, Ollie, so many to mention as well. Thank you very much for the people that come on the pod every single week. Thank you very much for the listeners that subscribe, tweet us, Facebook us, and interact with us throughout the week as well. So appreciate it. It was the Football Blacklist, and I was nominated and won in the, well, it wasn't really a nomination thing, it was just the award given for in the media category. So thank you very much for the people that make this show happen. Also Josh, Antonio, and Tom as well, who do our social media, record, and our sound on the show as well. So thank you to all involved. Right, let's get into a couple of drive-bys. Guys, I'm going to start with you, David. Sergio Aguero.
What about him?
Where does he rank in list of strikers to have played for a Manchester club in the Premier League era?
I mean,
no interruption, you know the rules, Aki.
This is the great thing, because Manchester club pre the Manchester City takeover, they were all glorious, weren't they? And on the red half, Ruud van Nistelrooy, Rooney, Andy Cole, Dwight York, Solskjaer, Sheringham, Aguero comes in. Is he better than all of them?
Sean Goulton, don't forget.
There's no interruptions on the. You've got 30 seconds left.
Certainly sits above Dickov, Gota, one shot, to name a few. Is he better than Van Nistelrooy in terms of what he does outside of the penalty area? Quite possibly. Van Nistelrooy was very much the archetypal fox in the box, and he was brilliant at it. He's done a lot of things perhaps on his own, whereas United teams, you know, specifically the one that won the treble, was built off the partnership of York and Cole.
Got 20 seconds.
I think you can go back and say that was possibly one of the finest in Premier League history. Where does he rank in terms of individual ability? Is he the best one? Is he better than Cantona? Maybe even on a par with him. He's certainly an absolute class act, Aguero. He scored so many goals, and Akin's really furious with me, and I'm looking forward to hearing his rebuttal to that.
But you won't, because your question is...
So, with that in mind, certainly top three.
Top three, that's fair. Okay. Akin. Fuming.
So go on then.
It's a question. It's your question. Give an answer. We move on. Akin, I think it's next week. The England have a game against USA. And it's been announced that Wayne Rooney will be drawn back out for this fixture. It's his charity, the Wayne Rooney Foundation. There'll be money raised for his charity and also another charity. I should know that, but I don't know. And there's been a bit of uproar about whether this is a good thing and whether Wayne Rooney should be involved in this game or not. Do you sit on the side of the fence that says this is a good thing, he's doing a good thing, let him get on with it? Or do you sit on the side of the fence that says it's taking valuable time away from another attack or another striker in a time when England have a bit of momentum, 18 months to the Euros, and it's a bit of a backward step and kind of going against what Gareth Southgate has kind of built up in this last year in particular?
18 months to the Euros. So in a football cycle, that's almost, or an international football cycle, that's almost the longest amount you can go to the next tournament, you know?
Well, 2 years is, but yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, okay, so, yeah, 25%, you've got 75% more time to go. If it was the international before the tournament starts.
But it's not games every week.
But
there's not many games.
Doesn't matter.
It's 18 months, but there's not a lot
of
games.
It's my drive-by, don't interrupt. Okay. Yeah. So, in any case, I sit on the side of the fence that who the hell. Not who cares, because it's raising money for people that need it. It's raising money for charities. So, it's a good thing. And I don't think it's costing England anything, because these international friendlies are a waste of time. They created a friendly tournament that they're dressing up as something that matters. I've forgotten what's it called? I can't remember the name. The Nations League. But in essence, they don't matter that much. So for me, it's a good thing. I think they've learned from the past, where I feel like the England national team have almost disrespected the men that served the national team very well. At where they could have kind of commemorated them, they didn't. And we wait for them to die or for something to happen before we start, you know, giving them a bit of love. Why not, in my opinion? It's a good thing. It's an international that shouldn't be happening. I hate these international breaks.
Got 10 seconds.
I don't think they bring much value. If you can kind of give them a kind of semi-testimonial, why not, is my opinion. If you can raise money whilst doing it, let's go.
Okay. I mean, I sit on the side of the fence that says...
I couldn't give a rebuttal to...
That's because you're a guest. I can rebuttal to anybody, all right?
All right.
Just briefly...
Billy Big Boots now.
I think you can still call it the Wayne Rooney Foundation match between England and America without him playing. You can still raise the money. He doesn't have to play. It's very indulgent to me, but that's just my opinion. It's your question. So.
Ah, fair enough. Your point is fair, but yeah, I have my opinion. Let him play, why not?
Let's move on. So let's get into our first topic of the pod. I want to talk something a little bit different, a bit lighthearted. I want to find out from you two guys, and I might do this again throughout the season with other football fans, but I'll start with you two. Tell me, start with you, Akin. I want to know your best and worst moment as a football fan. Now, Man United's obviously your football team, so it can be a moment, or two moments, in regards to following and watching your team. Or it could just be a moment that's nothing to do with your team. But I want to know, start off with your best moment. What has been the best moment as a football fan for you?
I prefer to start with the worst.
Okay, go worst. It's easier.
There have been some contenders over the past 5 years, since 2013. But I would say that the worst moment was actually within Ferguson's reign. And it was when John Terry was going to step up to take the penalty in the 2008 European Cup final in Moscow. And to me, we'd lost. And that's the closest I've come to almost crying. The closest I've come to crying over just football. Mm. And I was 22 at the time, so I was grown up enough to not, you know, I shouldn't be crying. But I was close. And I was... We were watching it together. There was like 50 of us because we just, yeah, it was in a bar somewhere. And then, yeah, it was tough. And I'll take, okay.
Samuel, your worst moment in football was
almost losing.
When you actually didn't even lose.
Almost losing, yeah. I know it sounds crazy, but I don't know. That just, and John Terry as well.
My Lord, you've been spoiled as a Manchester United fan.
As a final you won in the Champions League.
A brief moment where you thought, hang on a minute, we might lose this one. hang on a minute. Not Aguero, you know, from 4 years later.
No, actually. Yeah, that's weird, yeah.
losing a title to your rivals goal difference.
In the past 5 years, there are contenders in the past 5 years as well. I guess the Sevilla debacle is one of our worst moments. Where if
I've known you if three years now, and in that 3 years, Akin, that by far has been the most I've seen.
If that guy was in front of me, I think I would have. I might be in prison right now. I would have assaulted him. No, I don't know if that's controversial. Sorry. I'm not even apologising. Because it's true. Look, that night, but I would say, the Aguero moment as well, because on the journey to it, we lost, the league was done. It was, you kind of...
You resigned yourself.
I resigned myself to it. And then we went 1-0 up. And then I think City went 1-0 up. And then QPR went 2-1 up. And then our game finished, and I was like, there was still like a 2-goal swing. And I was like, we're going to win the league. And I was like,
it's coming.
And then they scored, and I said, but. And then, And I remember just lying down for like, I think an hour or so. But the strongest feeling I had was that moment when John Terry, of all people as well, was going to step up to beat us in the first All England European Cup final. And I don't know. I almost cried. That was the strongest feeling on the negative. Shall I go positive straight?
No. We're going to go around and give our negatives first. Okay. I'll quickly go just before you, David. As an Arsenal fan, I've said this before on the pod actually as well. The worst moment in football for me was the 5-1 loss to Liverpool at Anfield. 4 years ago,
there was a few,
but this one, all right, mate. But this one, but this was the Suarez got two, Sturridge got, I think one,
Sterling got
one as well. It was 3-0 after like I think 14 minutes or something.
4-0 very early as well.
And I think it was 3-0, 4-0 at half time. This is no exaggeration. It should have been 8. It should have been 8-0. Like, people say, oh, yeah, you can't score. They literally should have scored another three or four goals in that game. It was so bad. I remember being at work, and I had to package the game for work. So I was just, like, so pissed off. And everyone knows me knows that Liverpool are the one team that I hate losing to more than anybody else. More than Spurs, more than Chelsea, more than United. And not only to lose to them, but to be just blown away. When they talk about men against boys, that literally was professional men against under nines. It felt like it was just, we were weak, we were slow, we were thick, it was so embarrassing, and the goals were just coming on. I remember one time in that game, Suarez hit the crossbar from about 45 yards. He let off a shot from about 45 yards. I remember just inside the halfway line, and I just thought, they're boying it. They are really taking the piss now. And that was the one game where I thought to myself, this is the worst moment for me as an Arsenal fan. We were just humiliated, and that will never, ever leave me. They've beaten us worse than that in times before that. But that one game for me was the worst. It was the worst. And there was a time I was like, Wenger, allow it. Just allow it. But David, over to you. What's your worst moment as a football fan or a Spurs fan?
I mean, there are a few, and I think a lot of Spurs fans that would listen to this might think straight away would be the Chelsea-Bayern Munich Champions League final, which eventually put Tottenham to the Champions League when they were supposedly in the title race at one stage in the season. There's a few that stick out. One that it does involve Spurs, and two that actually involve watching England. The two that involve watching England, one of which was the Wally with the Brolly. I was there at Wembley that night when England lost 3-2 to Croatia. All right, England got outplayed by what turned out to be a very, very good Croatia team. But I think that's because that was the end of the qualifying campaign. And then for the first time in a long time, we had a summer of football to look forward to without England in it, which was hugely disappointing. Another one watching involving England, I was at the World Cup in South Africa in 2010. I was at the 0-0 with Algeria. I don't think I've ever left the game so angry in all my life from such a limp, lacklustre display. But when it comes to Spurs, I think one thing where I really felt this is horrible, this is embarrassing, this is pathetic, and this kind of goes back to Gary Neville's toothless, spineless, whatever.
5-3?
Actually, no. It was in the League
Cup. Take your pick.
It was, well, I've got loads of those, but it was in the League Cup semi-final against Burnley. While Burnley was still in the Championship, and Spurs had won 4-1 at home in the first leg, went to Turf Moor, and after 90 minutes were losing 3-0. because there's no away goals rule in the League Cup, that game went to extra time. Spurs grab two goals in extra time and go through to the final. You're thinking, well, what's the problem? Spurs have gone through to the final. Didn't feel like it. We'd been embarrassed, outplayed and humiliated by a team that was significantly inferior to what was a Spurs team that, bar the goalkeeper, was full of internationals.
That is so funny you mentioned that, because I had a similar thing with Arsenal when we beat Reading, I think 7-6. And we were 3-0.
You were 4-0 down at
one
point.
And we were 4-0 down. That game was significant. That was the first time in my life I said Wenger out. I remember being 2-0 down after like 8 minutes. I think it was 2-0. I said to my friend Abby, he will remember that. I said to him, even if we win this game, I want Wenger out. I want him out. It was so weird. We won that game and it was a cup game as well. And that was the first time I ever said I want Arsene Wenger. I want him out. I think it was 2012, I think it was maybe 2011. It was the first time I wanted him out. It's weird that you mentioned a cup game yourself, a game that you ended up winning, but still hurt.
You weren't happy. So you should understand.
That game was bruising in so many ways, and that game was one where Redknapp really felt like, right, now it's time. He'd been in for a few months, and I think Spurs were still either in the bottom three or bottom four at the time. He turned the corner a little bit, but we'd had a bit of a slump going into Christmas and coming into January, despite bringing back Defoe. But Spurs were really struggling. Went, right, this is my team now. We're doing this my way. And the form from then on, it significantly improved.
Give me your best moment now, and this will be short, because you know there's not been many
shots. Shots fired.
Hello.
With his water pistol.
Pavlyuchenko in a 2-1 win against Coventry. Go on.
Oh wow. That's
they've not been that bad. Again, got a few. The League Cup win over Chelsea, beating Man City 1-0 at the Etihad to finish fourth. But one that does stand out is a certain Carabao Cup win over Arsenal. Tottenham Hotspur 5, Arsenal 1. Meant all the more because we ended up obviously winning the trophy, but winning the game 5-1. And Wenger made a big thing about playing his younger players in the League Cup. The injuries to the younger players meant Arsenal had a very strong team out that night. I remember it very, very well. Galas, Fabregas, Gilberto, Adebayor, well, he came on as a substitute, Adebayor all featured. Spurs really wanted it that night, and I think 5-1 was probably about right from what I remember. So that's a game where I was flying for hours afterwards.
I'll go next before Akin wraps up. My best game as an Arsenal fan was the win against Real Madrid the year we got to the European Cup final. I remember that game. I remember the goal Omri scored. If you can all remember it, he got the ball.
I remember that pretty much.
I don't.
The reason why it was a great game for me and a great moment is because it was the first time that, it was probably the only time that I genuinely felt we're probably the best team in Europe right now. If not the best, one of the top two, top three in Europe. We were. I think we beat Juventus the round before. We then beat, I think before that, I think it was Wolfsburg who were good then as well.
Barcelona were the best team.
Well, they were the best team because they won the European Cup, but I just think, we had 10 men in that final, but let's not forget that. We've never
remembered. They had two goals.
Or whatever. But I'm just saying, it was the first time in my life I remember thinking, we are one of the best teams in Europe. I mean, Real Madrid had a good team that day. I think that game, Beckham, Zidane, Figo, I think Ronaldo was still there as well.
Guti was there as well.
He was. And we just bossed them. And it was at Boston? That's a Liverpool phrase. It was a great day. And that was probably the proudest moment as well. Way at the Bernabeu, Henri, probably one of the best three players in the world at the time. That was my best moment as an Arsenal fan. Akin, you go.
I won't say the 8-2 because that was nothing.
That'll get edited out. You know, that'll get chopped out. Just like, seriously.
For me, the European Cup 99 European Cup final was very special. The stoppage time and everything. But for me, the FA Cup semi-final replay. I remember the date. It's so sad. The 14th of April, 1999. Mm-hmm. Arsenal 1, United 2. The FA Cup semi-final was on the Saturday previous. We drew 0-0 at Villa Park. I think we should have won that, so be it. Ferguson played it. He changed his team. We were going for the treble that year. In a week's time, we had Juventus away. And that's another close one, the Juventus away match. But that FA Cup semi-final replay was... It was the two best teams possibly in Europe, definitely in our country. going head to head.
I remember. I mean, obviously for the goal, I remember this, but
the game. I remember the game itself was fantastic. It was. We had the first half. Arsenal had the second half. We went 1-0 up with Beckham.
Great goal.
Scoring a 25-yard.
Mm-hmm. It was like a free kick, but it was smoke and play. Yeah.
But then Arsenal came back into the game, being the great team they were. Bergkamp scored a deflected strike from a similar distance in the same net, actually. Roy Keane then gets sent off for a second booking. And then it's like, oh my gosh. And then Phil Neville brings down, who did he bring down? Ray Parlour in the box in stoppage time. Dennis Bergkamp steps up to take what will end up to be his final ever penalty as a professional footballer. You know, he never took a penalty after that again.
Didn't know that.
He missed five out of seven, I think, leading up to that penalty.
Had he? I didn't know the record prior.
He had a terrible record.
But that was his final. Okay, he never took a penalty after that. Schmeichel saved it. I even remember Schmeichel's celebration. When he saved that penalty, I knew that's it. And it's like all the stars aligned that season. And that game, everything... All of why I loved football came together. The two best teams going head to head in every way possible, on the pitch, off the pitch, the best managers, blood, sweat and tears. We had 10 men, a wonder goal. Harry Chest came out. It was brilliant. And then United went on.
Even as a loser in that game, you're right. It was a great game. And yeah, obviously it was gutted that my team lost it and lost it the way they lost it. But you're right. It was just a great game of football.
I was 9 years old with that semi-final. And I think that's a game that just sticks out with regards to the first game as a neutral that really sat with me. Sort of growing up, you know, I'd seen not many great games supporting Spurs. I think other than that, the only standout game from being under 10 would have been England beating the Netherlands 4-1 at Euro 96. Yes. Yeah. Otherwise, that was wow. I mean, just
that game was
that was the FA Cup typified two great teams as well.
Mm. And then for me, blood, sweat and tears, because we got a player sent off. So 10 men. Beckham limped off that game. Ryan Giggs limped off that game. Mm. I mean, players went down. Mm.
Like, it was war.
And then there was a pitch invasion after. You saw Ferguson celebrating with fans. Mm. Players being lifted on their shoulders by fans.
It was everything I loved.
I don't know. But it was everything beautiful about football.
It was a great game.
And my team won.
And which helps.
Yeah. And yeah, it does help. But again... Even if my team didn't win, and from a neutral perspective, watching that,
you can appreciate it.
Definitely.
Let's move on now, gentlemen. I want to talk about Southampton now, and to do so, I want to bring in Ben Stanfield from the Total Saints pod. Ben, how you doing, man?
Yeah, not too bad, John. How are you guys, all right?
We're very well, man. We're very well. We're talking then about our best and worst moments as football fans. Before we get into your season so far, because I assume it's going to take a bit of a negative turn when we talk about your club season so far, what was the best moment for you as a Southampton fan? What's the one moment that you'll always remember as the most positive moment being a Saints fan?
It's got to be Matt Le Tissier scoring the last ever goal at the Dow against Arsenal. Yeah. So, 3-2, last minute at the Dow, last game ever. Couldn't have asked for a more suitable player to score it than Litiz. So, probably the best moment for me, Jordan.
And, I mean, worst moment, I'm sure there's been lots, so you probably haven't got enough time to kind of go through the worst moments in Southampton's history.
Yeah, I'll try and round it down to the 10, I think. But, probably being relegated under Harry Redknapp in 2004, 2005, I think, even then as a young football fan, relegation is even it was on the cards for a long part of that season. But when it does happen, you still feel all the emotions as a football fan, don't you? So I think that was probably the worst. Being only time Saints have been relegated in my lifetime out of the Premier League.
And where does the 6-1 defeat to Manchester City yesterday rank in your worst moments as a fan?
Yeah, I mean, I have to be honest, it wasn't unexpected. I mean, the way we're playing at the moment, the way they're playing at the moment. And I think Saints fans, and there's been a lot of chat over the last 24, 48 hours about Saints, but unfortunately, I think many of us have just got to that level now where we're just expecting it to happen. So I can't say it was anything that particularly surprised me. Of course, it's disappointing, it's embarrassing, but I have to be honest, Jordan, I think on our pod last week we had predictions of 5-0, 4-0 and 3-0, it wasn't particularly optimistic, to be honest. So.
But is it not also the way you lost 6-1? Because... watching the game, there were points where it looked like City were genuinely mocking, like trying to score like the perfect goal, trying to have a... It just looked like it looked really bad on Southampton. And I know that City are a phenomenal football team. Southampton are in really poor form. But as a Saints fan, do you not just look at your team and think to yourself, what are you guys doing? You are professional footballers who are getting absolutely embarrassed out there. Do something about it.
Absolutely. I mean, to be honest, we've had performances on and off like that for the last 12, 18 months. And there's no leaders in that team. There's no one that you know grabs anyone else by the scruff of the neck and pulls the team together. I mean, you've got Ryan Bertrand as our captain. He's totally disinterested. You know, he I think, has realised that he's not going to get back in England squad. He's picking up his 60, 70, 80 grand a week. There's no motivation there. And to be honest, as football fans, you know, particularly as Southampton fans, and I know I was just listening to you guys talking about United and Arsenal and things like that. As Saints fans, we know that we will lose probably more than we win, but you expect to lose by putting in some effort and actually throwing bodies on the line, you know, not, you know, giving 100%. If you lose 6-1 to Man City and you've given 100%, no arguments. But when you see players just sort of walking around like that and, you know, whatever game plan Mark Hughes had is out the window within 18 minutes. And I mean, some of the defending's just, I mean, if you can't even call it defending, it was just laughable. And as I say, we've had performances like that the last 12, 18 months. So they've sadly become expected now.
And going forward, what? Because I was having a debate with some friends of mine today about Southampton, and one of the guys I was talking to was saying apparently Gordon Strachan is linked to be rehired at your club again. I don't know how much truth there is in that, but I made the point to the people I was talking today that for me would represent a real big shame, because you guys in appointing Pochettino all those years ago were very, very brave, and one of the first people, I think, in that kind of era anyway, of being brave in appointing someone that was relatively unproven and relatively young, and to kind of get to the, and it worked for you, and to kind of get to the point now whereby you, if you do reappoint Gordon Strachan, and even having Mark Hughes, does that not kind of go against everything that was working for you less than a decade ago?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think, I saw the likes of David Moyes, Gordon Strachan, people like that listed in terms of who could replace Mark Hughes. I don't think Gordon Strachan would necessarily come back. I mean, I think that is the question for lots of Saints fans. Yet again, we find ourselves asking, if we do get rid of a manager, who do you get in? Because who's available? I think the thing I'd say about Pochettino is that, you know, we had a different chairman, if you want to call him that, in Nicola Cortese. We had a different owner in those days in Marcus Lieber. A lot of water has gone under the bridge since then. Those people have left the club. Different owner has come in, different board in terms of Les Reed, Ralph Kruger, with their own ideas, if you can call it that, on what they want to do and how they want to run the football club. So I think for whatever reason, Mark Hughes, you know, came in at the end of last season. He kept Saints up. He did a good job. You know, they offered him a 3-year contract, and it's largely the same group of players that Claude Puel and Maurizio Pellegrino had, Jordan. So it's unsurprising, I think, that we're finding ourselves with a lot of the same issues. So for me, you know, Mark Hughes isn't doing himself any glory at the moment, but there's a much wider range of issues here than just the manager.
It's interesting that you mentioned players, and I think we're talking player recruitment here, something I want to talk about with you, because I know you lost Mitchell, he went on to Spurs, he sort of followed Pochettino that way, but Southampton lost a player I really highly rated over the summer. Dusan Tadic went to Ajax, and haven't really bought anyone else in. I think the most notable signing, apart from El Yunusi, I think, was Danny Ings on loan. So where do you think, you know, the player recruitment, why do you think that's stalled? Why do you think they're not attracting players of the quality that perhaps you were able to bring in under Pochettino, under Koeman, maybe to a lesser extent under Puel, you know, when you got to the League Cup final?
I think there's two reasons, two possible reasons. One, they haven't got the ability now within the club to actually spot talent in the way that they used to under the likes of Paul Mitchell. So I think, you know, some of the players that we brought in, Sadio Mane, all those sort of players that, you know, really hadn't been heard of within British football at that time, you know, and obviously stepped up to the mark and made the club a lot of money. The alternative is that they are spotting talent, and whoever is signing off the checks is deciding that they don't want to pay the money for them. I mean, we were linked in January with the likes of Theo Walcott. They tried to do what they could to get him. Quincy Promise they were linked with, but wouldn't pay what Spartak Moscow wanted. So I think it's a fine line between either they are going for bargains and the hope that they will then be able to cash in on them again, but they're getting found out because they're just paying 15 to 20 million, which in this day and age gets you a run-of-the-mill Premier League player. Mm. Or, as I say, they're simply not investing the sums of money that you need to really push on. You know, I would just add to that, though. I think as Saints fans, we've come a long way the last 10 years. You know, we were effectively 24 hours, we're, you know, potentially going out of business. And I don't think we would, as fans, ever want us to plough in millions and millions to try and sort of, you know, risk it to try and move forward. Maybe you look at Leeds United a few years ago when they tried to do it in the Premier League, and you look at where they ended up. And even Everton, I mean, Everton have spent, what, 250, 300 million? Mm. They're struggling to break into the top six. So it's a real fine line. I mean, I think as Saints fans, we're quite realistic. We need to spend money to progress, obviously, but I guess there's a line that comes when you sort of think, you know, how much do you risk?
Was it feasible, do you think, Ben, to have kept a lot of the players that you've ended up letting go over the last 4 or 5 years? So I'm going as far back as Lallana and Lovren and Callum Chambers and obviously most recently Van Dijk, Sadio Mane. People say, oh, if a player wants to go, you've got to let him go. There's a food chain, and if Liverpool United coming for your players, they're going to go. But do you think, or better question, how many of those players who have left, as a fan, would you have liked to have seen your club say, nah, you're staying, he can go because we can make big money from him or whatever, or his age, and, you know, we want to move him on, but you're staying?
I think the trouble is, Jordan, they tried to do that. You know, we saw last, 18 months ago, they tried to do that with Van Dijk and tried to actually set a precedent, say, right, from now on, we're going to keep hold of our best players, you're staying, et cetera, et cetera. The guy went on strike. He then sort of slowly came back into the side. He was given sort of 4 out of 10, 5 out of 10 performances. Clearly wasn't interested. You know, he was probably getting his 80, 90 grand a week. I mean, I think ultimately, you know, we know that players drive football these days, players and their agents. And I think once a player's head is turned, and, you know, Southampton are only ever going to be a small club in terms of their scope, where they are in geography and things like that as well. So they're never going to be able to pay 100 grand a week plus to some of these players. I mean, instantly a player can go from Saints to Liverpool and probably triple his wages. And, you know, footballers have a career, you know, short career, don't they? And I guess they have to think about what they can do to sort of line themselves up for life. So, I mean, look, looking back, obviously I would love Saints to have kept every player, but I think once a player decides they want to move on, it's very hard for football clubs to hold on to them now. And we seem to be probably the one that's really been punished the most over the last, what, 10 years, I'd say.
Yeah, I hear that. Just finally, Ben, when you went down all those leagues all those years ago, a big part of why you came back and there was a resurgence seemed to be that because you had no money, you had to invest in young players, you had to develop the players that you had. And we saw the likes of Lallana, Oxlade-Chamberlain, all those players kind of coming through and being products of that youth system that got you back to the Premier League. Is it a case now you've kind of gone, because you don't have to play young players anymore, you've now got into a malaise of playing lots of C-list European type players and they're just not good enough for the league? And should you go back to investing in playing those young players that got you back to the Premier League while you're currently still in the Premier League?
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because I think the trouble is, as pressure builds, you know, managers are less likely to throw youngsters in. Saying that, I mean, he brought on Obafemi at Man City yesterday, a young 18-year-old striker who's been scoring goals. So I think, you know, we've lost our way in terms of, even as a fan, Jordan, I don't know what the club's strategy is this day and age. You know, they used to talk about the Southampton way, which was the pathway, as you say, from the academy into the first team. I mean, you look at players that we've got out on loan now, some of the players that have been in and around the first team for maybe 4 or 5 years and just haven't got a chance. Sam Gallagher, Josh Sims, Jake Hesketh that's out of Burton at the moment, players like that. So, you know, clearly they are, for whatever reason, deciding that it is too much of a jump for them to get a chance in the first team. And I guess as pressure builds and results struggle, they're going to be less likely to give them a chance. So I honestly don't know what the answer is. But yeah, I mean, the academy, for the amount of money they've invested in it over the last 5 to 10 years, there is just no one coming through that is getting anywhere near the first team for whatever reason.
Do you think you'll go down?
I already find ourselves in you know, mid-November trying to spot three teams that are worse than us. We've got a massive game against Watford next week. At the moment, do I think we go down? We scored 7 goals in 11 games. Yeah, I think we've got a very good chance of going down this season, yep.
Ouch. Hopefully you won't, because I liked what you guys were doing 8 years ago with the appointments you were bringing in and also some of the young players you brought through that obviously, as you mentioned, got picked off by bigger clubs. Hopefully you'll turn it around. I don't like Mark Hughes, so I'm a little bit conflicted. So we'll see how that works out. But cheers for your time, Ben. Nice one, mate.
No worries. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, pal. Nice one. Ben. Okay, let's now move on to our final talking point of the pod today, gentlemen. I want to talk about Eddie Howe. And I want to know, and I will start with you with this one, David. Do you think he should be a strong candidate for the Spurs job if Pochettino is poached in the summer?
Okay, any Spurs fan who knows me knows how much I rate Eddie Howe. Not any Spurs fan, any football fan who knows me knows how highly I rate Eddie Howe and how I think he is very much suited to manage England one day if he continues on the trajectory that he's on. And there's a lot about him that I like. There's a lot about how Bournemouth have set up since they've come into the Premier League that I admire. His loyalty to his system, his loyalty to his philosophy, and his loyalty to his players, I think, is really quite amazing. Do I want him to manage Spurs if Pochettino goes? No, and I know that sort of contradicts everything that I've just said.
Just a bit.
Part of the reason is, and you might think this is so minuscule in comparison. This is his third job in football, but really his second if you consider he left Bournemouth to go to Burnley and then came back. So all he knows at the moment in managerial terms really is this club. There are, for argument's sake, 19 bigger clubs than Bournemouth in the Premier League, for argument's sake. Mm-hmm. And I know Pochettino, perhaps when he came into Spurs, had a relative lack of experience, if you like, but he'd been to Espanyol, he'd done a remarkable job there, and he'd done a remarkable job turning Southampton around and into the club that they turned into, and we didn't really touch on, we had to touch on them a little bit, I suppose, or his time with them a little bit with Ben, didn't we? But it is that relative lack of experience of managing in Europe, managing two games a week, you know, perhaps three games a week, learning how to rotate your squad effectively. And I know Pochettino's not won anything yet, nor really is Eddie Howe, and he's not learned, in my opinion, how to balance your squad in managing your team through a league season, through a domestic cup season as well, because they've gone out of the FA Cup early recently over the last few years. I know they're in the quarter final of the Carabao Cup again, but they scraped their way through there with a little bit of rotation, but it's a game he didn't need to rotate his players in. I love the way they play football, I don't mind the 4-4-2. But I just think right now, should Pochettino leave for Real Madrid, and I don't think we'd be daft enough to let him leave mid-season, he's not the right man.
Akin, is there a problem in this country in that we don't groom and coach and bring through talented managers and coaches and give them opportunities in and around the bigger clubs? If Eddie Howe was Spanish in Spain, would he be managing a top six Spanish club? Would he have the opportunity in the way that here it seems to be, unless you've got massive credentials and a massive catalogue of clubs you've managed, you can't go anywhere near the United job. Whereas your teams in Germany, your teams in Spain, they're much more comfortable in giving people, like an Eddie Howe, for example, an emerging coach, an opportunity.
He shouldn't be anywhere near the United job. Speaking about the Spurs job or the Arsenal job, is more accurate, or the Everton job.
I wasn't even talking about United. I was talking about...
You said that. But in any case, to answer your question, yes, there is a problem in this country in terms of grooming young managers, young coaches for bigger roles. I do think there is a step process that perhaps does need to be... But even do we need a step process?
Why? Pochettino went from Southampton to Spurs.
Yeah, exactly.
So why can't Eddie Howe go from Bournemouth to Spurs?
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. He should. That's the type of level... You mentioned at the last bit the United job. Mm. I think a couple jobs in the country are huge. Mm. But then below that, there's a tier of clubs that is next level, Everton, Arsenal, Spurs, that Eddie Howe should be considered for, given what he's done. In terms of what he's done also, people have issues with someone like Sean Dyche and the way he plays football. But in terms of results and how he's grown the club that he's been at, he should be considered for that type of role as well.
But the thing with Eddie Howe is, it's like I say, he went to Burnley. He went to a bigger club than Bournemouth, couldn't adapt, and left.
And that's another issue I think we have in our country, in that somebody could have a failure and we almost write them off completely for it.
So I'm not saying Howe should be written off at all, because like I say at the start, I think one day he'd make a wonderful England manager.
But why isn't that day now?
Well, that day now is because we went for Gareth Southgate.
When
the Everton job was vacant, Eddie Howe, I can't remember if he was linked with it and then sort of distanced himself from it.
He wasn't even linked with it.
So,
but there was jobs.
I'd find that a more accurate... We're talking about progression. I'd find that and I know some may say Everton are a bigger club than Spurs, and that's an argument which has valid points to it, and that's perhaps for another time. But where we are now in the football pyramid, that could be, some may even say that's too big a jump, but that could be a more accurate step.
But is he a victim because he's English? Pochettino got the job at Spurs off the back of doing a good year at Southampton. So I'm saying if this was a different country and Eddie Howe would be, and the question didn't say should he get the job, the question says should he be a strong candidate for the job? Should he be on the top three names linked with that Spurs job?
I think he should be considered for those types of roles, for what he's done in the club that he is at now, and for how he's grown them, and then you bring in the style of football, the attributes that you mentioned in terms of.
I just can't help but thinking that if he was Dutch or if he was German and he was over there, and I'm not kind of going down the whole Allardyce, if my name is Allardyce, I'd be a AC Milan coach route, but there is something in this example in that the football he plays is good. He's good with young players. He's kept Bournemouth for very, very small.
There.
Yeah, he's.
I think a lot of it is Guardiola came through the youth system really at Barcelona, and at the time, they felt, you know, they weren't, their status, if you like, as a superpower in Europe, what had sort of dwindled a little bit,
but only a tiny bit.
A tiny bit, but they weren't regularly in the Champions League.
They had a little spell where they weren't regulars. They won the European Cup in 2006 with Rijkaard, and Rijkaard was their manager. Guardiola managed the B team.
I'm thinking perhaps pre-Rijkaard. Yeah,
because you guys mentioned Guardiola.
Granted, I was in the pre-Rijkaard era here. So they were on their way back as a superpower, but that sort of opened up for him. But Real Madrid also have a similar stance of recruiting from within, because they did with Zidane. It looks like they might do the same with Solari now as well. Perhaps we just don't tend to really do that here. Maybe that is just because there is so much expectation, if you like, on bigger clubs that we don't feel like we can throw a young manager in. We
know what the problem is.
I think the solution is on teams like Spurs, stop being snobs.
Arsenal is a similar type. No, they're not.
I'll take issue with that. We're a genuine big club.
Spurs are a genuine
no,
big
they're
club.
Not.
That's the well.
All right, let's not get into that. The point I'm making is even I would say
that's borderline debatable. Spurs are genuine big club.
But the point I'm making is when Arsenal were looking for a manager this summer. Mm-hmm. Would you have supported the appointment of Eddie Howe?
But you know my stance on when Wenger left. I was team risk.
Mikel Arteta.
I was team risk. I didn't say I wanted, but I said I was team
risk.
I'm
not saying are you team risk. I'm asking would you have supported the appointments of someone like Eddie Howe?
I would have.
Sean Dyche?
No.
Mikel Arteta?
Yes.
Patrick Vieira?
Yes.
And on what basis, though?
On the basis that, I mean, this is a slightly different point, but I wanted a manager at my football club that was the unknown, that would have brought something completely new to the table. Okay, those managers, probably bar Dyche, didn't have like a pedigree of body of work to see what they'd done before. But I was all about finding the next Pochettino, finding the next Pep Guardiola, not regurgitating or recycling what we've
seen
before.
And then say if that risk was taken and you dropped down the table.
I would have lived and died by my decision. I think that's the whole point.
Fair enough, you're being consistent.
Perhaps one thing with Eddie Howe, and I think this is a fair criticism of Pochettino as well, and this is something that again is very much up for discussion. It's in-game management. So it's all well and good. The game looks, you know, we're playing lovely football, but we're drawing 0-0, we're drawing 1-0, we're battering a team. On Saturday, Bournemouth were much the better team against Manchester United. Yet Mourinho managed the game in a way that he ended up winning it. And that, I wouldn't necessarily put that down to luck.
Is it to do with personnel, the tools that they have at their disposal?
Maybe. But at a crucial time in the game, he removed, I think it was Ryan Fraser, and I think he took off, it was one of the guys in centre midfield, and he brought on Dan Gosling and Jordan Ibe when they were running the game. That wasn't the time to make those changes. In-game management is everything. And that's something that Spurs supporters, you know, myself included, are very critical of when it comes to Pochettino. Mm-hmm. Last season against Juventus, not reactive enough mm-hmm. to when we went
you know, 2-1 down. I think that's
about 15, 20 minutes.
That's the thing. It's a bit too late. So I think it's more. We'd need to see more from Eddie Howe within the game, and maybe that's a personnel thing, and maybe that could be down to investment in how Bournemouth go ahead in the January transfer window, and if he's there again next summer, you know, where they sort of go from there too. But for now, it's the wrong thing.
I look at some of the players that he's got in that team, and I've just got here Brooks, who he signed in the summer. Too early to kind of decide whether he's kind of improved him, but he's having a good start to the season. Nathan Ake, since he's gone to Chelsea, seems to be an established Bournemouth centre-back now. Ryan Fraser has had a good 2 years, I would say, at Bournemouth. Wilson, okay, he's not going to be a world-class striker, but he seems to be a guy that's doing a job. Kick, Cook and Francis were actually with Bournemouth in League 2, I believe, and they're still the cornerstone of their defence.
That's what I mean by loyalty to players.
Yeah, he's been very loyal. No, but a lot of his acquisitions or his recruitment hasn't worked.
I agree.
Yeah.
But my point being, if he can get the team, like a little team like Bournemouth, to stay in the Premier League for four seasons with two players that were in League 1 4 years ago,
he's
doing something right.
He's finally made a big signing that I find impressive in Lerma, who looks a real player and a real talent. And David Brooks has done very well since he's come in.
So he's learning.
But this is what I was going to say. We're talking about in-game management and areas where these managers need improvement. The same way we respect that an 18-year-old player, and if they, in the management world, Eddie Howe and Pochettino, in the equivalence of their age, they'd be about early 20s as a footballer. Mm. Yeah, we respect that they need development. An intelligent football fan would respect that time. He's young, so he's going to make those mistakes, etc., etc. How comes that kind of luxury isn't given to managers? Fair enough, their in-game management has proved wanting at times, but isn't that the type of risk we should take?
I think
whilst they learn that development, can they not come into a bigger club?
I think to
like Spurs, Arsenal,
I think to
Everton.
To a degree, I think
Nottingham
there is.
Forest.
I think that's fair. I heard Nottingham Forest.
Aston Villa.
They are a big club, to be fair. I think that time is afforded, and I think that's very much afforded with, you know, with Poch. He's been at Spurs for 4 years. That first season, and you and I were talking off mic, that first season where he was at Spurs, all right, they finished fifth, but I could count on one hand the number of league games we're talking here where you could clearly see signs of progression. And then it was the season after that where Leicester went on to win the title and Spurs ran them close. But for the first half of that season, Spurs went on a game of 16 matches unbeaten. 10 of them were draws. So at the end of the day, we gave Pochettino the time to develop, to turn them into this team. It's now that we're saying that if he's not winning trophies, he has to go. Far from it. It's will the squad start to disband?
Yeah.
That's what we're getting to. So I think managers are afforded the time, providing there's just some form of sign of
progress.
What there is, a manager wants to do. And you and I have said before that you'd be happy writing off this season with Arsenal on the basis that
you see some progress under
Emery. And in the first 3 months of the season,
there has been progress. Just finally on this one, I personally can see someone like Eddie Howe getting poached by a mid-table German or Spanish team.
That's what he has to do. If he wants to progress
But anyway.
We've discussed why.
Yeah, okay.
But I think that is what he has to do. He has to go abroad.
I want to hear, finally, if Poch does leave this summer and goes to United or goes to Madrid, wherever, and he being appointed the new manager of Spurs, how do you think that would go down amongst the majority of Spurs fans? Having seen what Pochettino's route has been, that's quite key.
Well, I mean, I can only speak for myself from when Pochettino was hired 4 years ago. And I remember thinking, I'm not sure. I wasn't completely convinced. Obviously, he's done enough to make me think otherwise. I think there'd be plenty of Spurs fans that may have a similar mindset of, okay, yes, he's done very well at a significantly smaller club, and he's had a smaller budget and a smaller fan base with significantly lower expectations. Unfortunately for him, if he did get the Tottenham job, if it ever arose, the expectations now is that Spurs are always in the Champions League. Mm. And for a young manager, first huge job.
It's a big ask.
Is that too big an ask? And could what happens to him potentially be a bit too damaging if it doesn't go well.
That's a good point. Fair point. Just before we wrap up, guys, I want to get your opinions just briefly on this. Start with you, David. Are you Team Neville or Team Redknapp?
What with last week's debate? If we're talking,
was he out of order and went too far, or was Redknapp just kind of crying over?
I mean, take Redknapp's spell out of the equation prior to Pochettino's arrival. Neville's not completely wrong.
He's 100% right.
I mean, I would argue even with the Redknapp era, he was still a bit spineless to some degree. But
I agree. I'm with Neville in that, even including the Redknapp era.
I mean, Neville's right in 3-0 up against Manchester United, lose 5-3, and he was in the squad that day. 3-0 up against a 10-man Manchester City, lose 4-3. 4-2 up against 10-man Leicester, draw 4-4. Under Tim Sherwood, getting battered 4-0 by Liverpool and Chelsea, and then being well beaten somewhere along the line by Arsenal in the FA Cup as well.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Spurs were, to a degree, I know we got picked up a lot of points under Sherwood, you know, but against the bigger clubs,
even
we were
coming
spineless.
Fourth that year and dropping out of the Champions League because of Chelsea.
That is Spurs. I mean, I can sort
I'm sure
of see
you were in contention for third.
Spurs,
I think you were third for most of the year or something.
There was a league table, I think it was, from when Fabio Capello left the England job to the end of the season. I think Spurs finished it fifth from bottom.
And when
Capello left,
like
Spurs were third. Spurs were third in the Premier League and had just dumped Newcastle 5-0. There was a real drop off after that.
The wider point of this, because you've both given your opinion on kind of where you stand on it, but the wider opinion is in terms of pundits possibly going too far. So if we agree to some degree that Neville was probably correct in what he was saying, is there a line in you can make a point, but when he starts talking about they were rubbish and
what's wrong if that's his opinion, what is wrong with him saying that? He thought they were gutless, spineless. I don't know if he used the word rubbish. I don't think he did.
I think he did. I think he actually did.
But pathetic, I think, is a word he used. Strong language. But if that's what he believes, and that was his experience going up against them, then why... He wasn't disrespectful about any people. He wasn't...
Well, you are.
He made an appraisal.
Anyone that's played on Manchester Spurs in that period, I'm calling pathetic.
No, he's not. He's made an appraisal on the team.
Well, yeah. So if you played for Spurs,
I mean, that's not making a comment on you as a person or you as a footballer.
Okay, not directly, talking about me. I played for Spurs 8 years ago. So you're talking about me.
No, you're talking about the team that you were
in. I'm part of the team,
and you were part of a pathetic team.
It doesn't mean you are a pathetic footballer.
It doesn't mean you're a pathetic human. It means the team that you was a part of was pathetic. There's a difference. On top of that, I think Harry Redknapp was very petty and precious going on about it. If he was comfortable enough, and maybe a bit insecure, given that Pochettino, in my opinion, has usurped his achievements, if he was comfortable enough, he would know that he doesn't need to say anything because it's implied that he obviously didn't mean him. Neville might not have meant him,
but Neville was more talking.
Yeah, he was more talking about the team today in trying to compliment what they are now. It wasn't an exact attack on anybody in particular of the past. He was just making the comparison. So precious and petty and a bit insecure had to come out and make a thing of it.
Prior to Martin Jol's appointment at Spurs, in the Premier League era, they'd never finished in the top six. Jol broke that mould. So you could argue perhaps that was to a lesser extent from when Jol came in going forward. Before that, Spurs were very much... You never know what team you're going to come up against. You never know, as supporters, what team you're going to be turning up to watch. You know, if I'm right in saying Fergie's team talks before those games,
it's Spurs.
Come on, lads. That cracked me up so much.
So if that's completely, if that is completely true,
I knew against Spurs and Villa. No offense, I knew it was 3 points.
They called it the three point lane, and I was even at
3-0 down. We can get a draw. Once we got a goal early, it was like, 3-2, we're going to do it.
I was at that game. I was at that game with my dad and with my brother, and I remember it well. When Andy Cole, I think it was, scored within a minute of coming on at half-time.
Did you cry?
I didn't cry. I remember my dad thinking...
Did you know that?
I remember him saying something similar. I'm pretty certain he said something similar.
Did you feel it?
Yeah.
You knew.
You just knew.
Even as soon as we scored straight after half-time, I was like, okay, at least a, it's the,
at least
this, but this
a,
was the main,
at least, you
this
know.
Is, no, this is the partly the Man United way.
Arrogance.
It's not even arrogance, but the
no,
team
but it was,
that
but
United
justifiable
had, even on 85 minutes, if we was within a goal, I'm looking at winning that game. Even if we were a goal down at 85 minutes, I'm looking at winning that game. That same game, if it's 90 minutes, we're going to draw. And it was, you know, I'm at least going to see something. And it was even Mark Hughes. It's funny enough that we kind of went at him on this. He's been a crap manager. But as a player, Sparky is a United legend. And he's one of the early guys that kind of took me to United. But in any case, Mark Hughes said that Ferguson, one saying was that United never lost games. We only ran out of time.
Okay.
And that was one thing. But coming back to the Spurs one, 3-0 down, it's like, what the hell, man? You're thinking, it's Spurs, you know? And then we got a goal straight away. Okay, at least a draw.
But the second goal came very soon afterwards as well.
And it was like, it's done.
And just super briefly, has that... Do you think the steel that he was saying was lacking is now there in as far as we're seeing a significant improvement? Or does that still mean they have to cross the line and win a trophy?
Until
they win a trophy, you're still spineless.
Well, in previous regimes, the game at the weekend where Spurs are winning 3-0, they probably go on to draw that at the very least. They might even go on to lose it. That's the thing. Is it time Spurs win a trophy? I mean, the fact that we've been away from home now for the last 20 months, if you want to call it that, and use that as an excuse, and I know a lot of Spurs fans might. This is the last season, and I mean it, and I've really felt this. This is the last season we could get away with being trophyless. Otherwise, that squad will start to disband.
See, I thought it was last season.
I felt because we had a season away from Wembley.
I mean, thought that gave you a bit of
that gave a
grace
bit
spirit,
a bit of leeway. After that, I just think that's why domestic cups. I was so pleased he put out quite a decent 11 against West Ham last week, and I really hope against Arsenal in the quarterfinals we see a very strong Spurs side.
Just mentioned there by my producer Josh there that Ali has signed a 6-year deal, so he's not going anywhere for a little while. So
only increases his transfer value.
Well, I was going to say that as well. You've got my lot twice in December, and they all say around Christmas is good to look after the homeless as well. So I'm quite glad we're playing you guys as well. On that note, David and Akin, cheers for coming on
well
the
done,
pod,
well
guys.
Well done.
That was quite good for me, to be fair.
You're one moment.
Do not forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Spotify, Football Fans Podcast. If you have not already followed us on Facebook, please do. It makes a difference. Leave us a comment also on iTunes or Facebook. Whatever, hit us up. We're on Twitter, Football Fans Pod. We're on Instagram, Football Fans Podcast. Get in touch, let us know. Until next week, peace.